Celeste Headley here. John Hockenberry is out today. And the United States is getting some criticism that we're not doing enough for protesters in Egypt. What do you think?
I'm very sorry. You know, we have to spread our money here. We don't need to get involved in another war over there, you know? Please, we have enough problems in America, and let's stay here.
If you were in charge of U.S. foreign policy, what would you do this morning? Give us a call at 877-8-MY-TAKE or at thetakeaway.org. Let's get a look at headlines now at 48 minutes after the hour. Pro-democracy demonstrators still pouring into Tahrir Square in Cairo this morning. Here's the sound. Once again, the rallying cry, Mubarak must go. The crowd is waving flags, monitoring new arrivals to Tahrir Square to make sure pro-Mubarak supporters do not infiltrate the crowd. We got a much-awaited announcement from the Egyptian military this morning. The military says it's supporting President Hosni Mubarak's plan to stay in office until elections, with Vice President Omar Suleiman leading the transition. Egyptian state TV read the statement from the Supreme Council of the Armed Forces.
The Council has guaranteed the implementation of the following resolution, ending the emergency law once the current circumstances come to an end, to hold free and fair elections.
Major concessions would have been a huge headline about a month ago, but they fall short of the protesters' demands now, who want President Mubarak to step down. One Tahrir protester named Noor tells CNN that the demonstrators are livid.
The people won't stay quiet. The people will not accept this. And the military knows this. Mubarak knows this. And they know that the people are enraged.
It's not just in Cairo either. Thousands of pro-democracy protesters have taken to the streets all over the country, in Alexandria, Suez, Mahalla, Tanta, Ismailia, all throughout the country. A human rights group says a Chinese activist and his wife were beaten after releasing a video that documented their house arrest. Chen Guancheng had accused local officials of coercing thousands of women in his province into abortions and forced sterilizations. Nokia and Microsoft are forming a new partnership. The two companies will attempt to use shared resources to compete with the popular iPhone and Android devices. Earlier this week, Nokia's chief executive sent a memo to his staff warning that the company is in crisis. And 3.4 million. That's the number of cell phones on the planet, according to a new study of the Digital Era published in this week's edition of the journal Science. The study puts 2002 as the official beginning of the digital age. That is the year that worldwide digital storage capacity overtook total analog capacity. You're listening to The Takeaway. You can follow us on Twitter at The Takeaway.
To the youth of Egypt, stationed in Tahrir Square and nationwide, I address you all with a speech from the heart, a speech from father to his children, to his sons and daughters.
That is President Hosni Mubarak speaking to his country last night, telling the protesters basically to go home. He's not stepping down until September. His vice president, his appointed vice president, Omar Suleiman, followed later, literally telling the protesters to go away. Crowd was angry after that. Obviously a disconnect between Mubarak and the youth that he is supposedly addressing in his speech. And it's something our listeners have been noting as well.
This is Jake calling from NIAC. And I think what we're seeing in Egypt is a generational divide. And I think it was pretty much the same thing in Iran and Tunisia, where young people who know how to use technology can't understand why the old guard is still doing things behind closed doors, and we're not using things like Twitter, Facebook, to allow everybody to have a democratic voice. And I think we're eventually going to see the same thing here in the U.S.
Joining us now is Edward Sayer, an associate professor of political science, international development, and international affairs at the University of Southern Mississippi. Sayer is a contributor to a 2009 Brookings Institution report that's called Generation in Waiting: The Unfulfilled Promise of Youth in the Middle East. Good morning, Edward.
Good morning.
We've been talking about this generational divide all morning long, a generational divide that people are noting even within the Egyptian army. And we're getting these reports that some mid-level junior officers have stepped away from the army and actually joined the protesters. Do you see that as a generational gap?
Well, there's definitely going to be a gap between the leaders in Egypt right now and the people on the street, but it's actually at least two generations that are separating them. If you recall, Mubarak's actually in his 80s, and he hasn't done much of a job in terms of developing a strong set of leaders, even one generation below him. So it is not surprising that some of the officers, even in their 50s and 60s, may be separating themselves from the Mubarak regime right now.
Well, some of the people who are out in Tahrir Square protesting Mubarak have had him as their president for their entire lives, and know no other president of Egypt. Do you feel as though the youth movement, the youth activists who are helping to lead the pro-democracy demonstrations, do they have a clear idea, do you think, of what they want post-Mubarak?
Well, I believe that they have an idea of that there must be something better than what they've had at this point. A generation that has grown up under a single ruler, and even if you go back before that, people in their 40s and even early 50s really have only known two rulers. And so even those older protesters and the older Egyptians they know that the situation wasn't sustainable. They know that there has to be something better out there. And the situation is simply one of the right forces coming together, with 80% of the total unemployment being in this 15 to 29 age group that we talk about in the volume, Generation in Waiting, and 95% of the total unemployment actually being those with secondary schooling or better. This is a large population, over 30% of the population, that has not had the economic and political opportunities, the civic participation that they believe is their right as citizens of the world. And it was only a matter of time before the right forces came together that led to this.
Well, you know, I'm wondering, I wanted to gauge your reaction as you were listening to Hosni Mubarak's speech. There are some people who said he said exactly the wrong thing to the youth of Egypt, that his tone, that he is Egypt, that he is the father of Egypt, was almost designed to enrage them. Do you think that's true?
I don't think it was designed to enrage them. I think it just shows the clear and utter disconnect. Throughout the Middle East, in the post-colonial era, there have been times when the set of leaders that brought them to a certain point in their history has no longer been relevant, and it was time to move on. This happened in 1990-91 in Algeria, where the Party of the Revolution essentially had to eventually step down to some degree because they were no longer relevant. They no longer had the credibility and the legitimacy that had gotten them in power. And at this point, with a generation or two removed from the post-colonial era, it's a disconnect of it's just a chasm. It's such a disconnect that there's no way that the current leaders are able to understand what is going on the streets in any direct way.
Edward Sayers, the Associate Professor of Political Science, International Development, and International Affairs at the University of Southern Mississippi. He was also one of the authors of the 2009 Brookings Institution report called Generation in Waiting, The Unfulfilled Promise of Youth in the Middle East. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
We're joined once again by our friend Zachary Lockman. He's a professor of Middle Eastern and Islamic Studies and History at New York University. I'm wondering, Zachary, if you have a response to the idea that Edward brought up of just this chasm between the older generations and the young people of Egypt.
Well, I think it does make a lot of sense, and clearly the energy of this movement in Egypt was generated by the young people. On the other hand, if you look at the pictures of protesters, everybody's out there in the streets.
Yeah, it's not just young people.
Absolutely. You have old people as well. There's very widespread discontent. Naturally, it's the younger people who have the energy, they have the connections, they have they're more open to new ideas, and they were ready to take risks, the people who initiated this.
Well, to whom do you think is Hosni Mubarak speaking then when he talks about the fact that they have been, that the crowd has been deluded, that they have been influenced by Al Jazeera and foreign influences, and that this is actually a minority of the Egyptian people?
This is a very old tactic. Regimes in power always blame outside agitators. The people would be fine, except these people from the outside with their own hidden agenda have come to corrupt them. Nobody takes this seriously. This is again, a sign of a dying regime unable to connect with its own people.
I wanted to just gauge your response to the idea that Mubarak's speech was the moment at which the revolution turned. Do you think that's true?
Well, it certainly, given the expectations that people had yesterday that something was about to change, the momentum has been growing. To hear this kind of talk, to hear this language, to hear him speak as a father to his children in that patronizing, paternalistic language, and also to say how much he felt for those who died in the violence of the previous weeks, and he'd investigate. This was a slap in the face to people because it was his security forces and his thugs whom he sent who killed those young people. So this seemed so hypocritical and so out of touch It was I think, a shock to the crowd.
Zachary Lachman, professor of Middle Eastern and Islamic Studies and History at New York University, thanks so much for being with us. You can hear the crowd from Cairo live there. We'll bring you the latest developments from Egypt all morning long. John Hockenberry is out today. I'm Celeste Headlee. This is The Takeaway.
This is Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, the Science Friday team has been reporting high-quality science and technology news, making science fun for curious people by covering everything from the outer reaches of space to the rapidly changing world of AI to the tiniest microbes in our bodies. Audiences trust our show because they know we're driven by a mission to inform and serve listeners first and foremost with important news they won't get anywhere else. And our sponsors benefit from that halo effect. For more information on becoming a sponsor, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.